Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
Hello, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Tehillah Lamed Chet, Psalm 38. This psalm is a classic example of an individual lament, where an individual cries out to God for help. A single person here is lamenting his predicament. He lashes out at unfair treatment by his enemies, and he prays to God for help. What's distinctive in this psalm is the heavy emphasis and admission of the psalmist's own sin, of his own guilt. The psalmist is under no illusion that the troubles that he is going through are unfair and unwarranted. He suffers due to his own transgressions, he freely admits. And you'd be surprised how few laments actually have the psalmist admitting to such guilt, or at least doing so in such an overt manner. Some, in fact, quite the opposite. Some psalms protest to innocence, not to guilt. Here, however, while the author is aware of the guilt, the fact that he is guilty of sins, he still complains about his enemies and about his former friends who take advantage of his predicament, and he begs for salvation from God. Our psalm breaks down as follows. Verse 1 is the title, which is not really part of the poem itself. Mizmor leDavid leHazkir, a song of remembrance by David. As usual, it's hard to know exactly what the inscription means and what the intent of the word lahazkir is. Rashi said that this is actually used in the time of national troubles to remind God of the troubles that his people are in. The Radak, however, says that this psalm is used as a reminder for a sick person to talk with God when he is in his time of personal suffering. If we combine these two ideas, it could be that lahazkir is a way for a sick individual to remind God, lahazkir, so to speak, about his personal suffering. Now that God doesn't remember, obviously the prayers are really for us, but it's a way that we could say, you know, God, please refocus, as it were, on my personal problems. Verse 2 and 3, first invoke God's name and then plead directly to him to lighten the severity of the punishments which are piercing and pounding on the supplicants. Adonai al biketz becha tochicheni uvacha matcha tiyasereni. O Lord, do not in your anger rebuke me, do not in your wrath discipline me. The word al, of course, is to be borrowed from the first half of the poetic line and taken over to the second half. Without that word al, then the author would seem to be asking God to discipline him, and obviously that's not the intention. So the way that you have to read it sort of in a virtual way is to say, Adonai al b'ketz b'cha tochicheni, the al b'cha matcha tiasreni. This borrowing from a word from one half of a poetic line and taking it over to the other half is very common in biblical poetry. And in fact, this supplication, this prayer, is a near duplicate of Psalm 6, Tehillah Vav, which reads, Adonai al b'yapecha tochicheni v'al b'cha matcha tiasreni, which is said, this prayer, that Psalm 6, is said most mornings in traditional prayers following the silent standing prayer called the Amida. The connection, and more importantly, the contrast between these two psalms, our Psalm 38 and that very common Psalm 6, are very significant, as we shall see later on. Continuing on with the psalm, Ki chitzecha ni'icha tuvi vatinchat ala yadecha. Ki here doesn't mean so much because, but indeed, it's an affirmation. Or perhaps it means behold, that is, we want to catch God's attention. That is, it is clear that the punishments are already upon the psalmist. Indeed, your arrows have pierced me and your hand weighs down upon me. So if we look back at the first line, the author, who as we shall see, is quite aware of his own sins, and he is accepting, in a sense, of the justification of the heavy punishment, is pleading that from here on in, that the punishments not come with God's full force and God's full anger. So really, the first line of poem seemed to be saying, don't punish me at all. But then when we take a look at it, we really see what he's saying is, don't punish me with your full force and your full anger, because right now your arrows are piercing me, your hand weighs down upon me, and I can't bear it anymore. And now the author essentially admits the full extent of his sins. And at the same time, he also describes the full extent of his physical suffering, which has resulted by being punished for his sins. Now, this section where he describes his sins and describes the effect that it has on his physical body is easily identified because it opens up in verse 4 and concludes in verse 8 with the exact same phrase, quote, "There is no soundness in my flesh," ein mitom bivsari, which creates what's called a literary envelope or an inclusio. Ein mitom bivsari mipnei za'amecha, ein shalom ba'atzamai mipnei chatati. There is no soundness in my flesh because of your anger, i.e. there's no area on my flesh without wounds. My bones are unsound because of my sins, mipnei chatati. So the author comes out and admits, I am a sinner. And that the punishment, even in its very severity, is in fact justified. But he is clearly begging for God to lighten the punishments because he's saying, there's no place more for me to be hurt because I have no flesh left untouched, which won't really bring me down completely. Ki avonotai avru roshi, indeed my transgressions pass over my head. The imagery here is that the sins are like water building up. Every time he commits a sin, he's sinking further and further. The water is building up higher and higher, and he's drowning in the sheer quantity of his sins. And now for the quality of them, kimasa chaved yichbedu mimeni, like a heavy load, they are too weighty for me. Hiv ishu namaku chaburotai mipenei ivaliti, my wounds stink and rot due to my own evil doing or my own folly. And now we have the closing pair. We have a pair of psukim. The first line, the first pasuk, describes the awful state and the awful state of suffering. And the second is once again an admission of the cause of the suffering, which is the sin. Na'aveti shachoti ad ma'od kol hayom koder hilachti. I am woefully crooked and bent over low. Every day I walk, or perhaps every day I am led in darkness, koder, or perhaps in mourning. Ki chasalai mala'u niklev ve'ein mitom bivsari. Because my innards, my loins, actually, chasalai or loins, are full of burning. Indeed, the psalmist repeats and finally concludes his envelope, no part of me is unscathed. A kesel, the word kesel is also used for senseless confidence, foolishness, foolhardiness, perhaps because the keselim, the body part, was considered a source for one's foolhardy behavior. And now in verse 9, 10, and 11, the author continues his suffering with a hint at his sins, but the suffering is now focused on his psychological non-well-being, rather than the physical non-well-being that we had in the previous verses, ein mitom bivsari. And the source of the sin also seems to be psychological, and therefore to be somewhat deserving of mercy by God, because God should try to understand his psychological leanings, his spiritual leanings. Nifugoti v'nidketi ad ma'od sha'agti minahamat libi. I was horribly shocked and depressed. I roar from the turmoil of my mind. As I've mentioned before, the word lev, the heart, was considered the center of thought. So it's a mistake, I think, to think of this section as continuing physical ills, as if my heart is screaming, like there's something physically wrong with my body. As I mentioned, the words ein mitom really closed up that section where we were focusing on the physical suffering. We are now up to the effects that physical suffering has on the mind. And the word nifugoti, actually from pag and puga, and the word nidketi from daka are both very difficult, and they really different commentators approach it in different ways. But the word nufugoti, most commentators note its first use in the Torah, which is in chapter 45 of Genesis, when the brothers of Joseph come to tell their father that in fact Joseph is alive. That is, they tell their father, Yaakov, that Joseph is still alive, and consider the fact that 20 years earlier, they convinced them that he was dead, that Joseph was dead. So in response to the news, it says of Jacob, Vayafog libo ki lo ha'emin lahem. The sense is that his mind went cold or was shocked, and he was so disbelieving or could not believe that he simply didn't believe what they were saying. So here too, the person is shocked by what is happening to his body. Vinidketi means crushed and oppressed, and while it can mean a physical oppression, it could also mean a spiritual, psychological oppression, and therefore I translate it as the word depressed, but not in a light way. I mean a real severe medical depression. Adonai negdecha chol ta'avati v'anchati mimcha lo nistara. My Lord, you are aware of all my desires, ta'avati, my groaning is not hidden from you. Now, this verse is a bit unbalanced because the second half seems to be saying to God that all of his suffering is known to God, as if to petition him, God, that because of its severity, because God fully sees how bad things are getting emotionally for him, spiritually, psychologically, he's asking God to pull back from such a severe punishment. But the first half is focusing on something that apparently God understands all of his tava. Now, tava usually means physical desires, which usually often drive a person's sin. So perhaps the psalmist is saying, perhaps, please understand my sins and my actions, since they are the result of the desires that are built into my system. Of course, this is a bit of an accusation, actually. It's sort of like saying, hey, God, you made me this way. You gave me my desires, so therefore you should have some mercy on the fact that I commit sins. The only problem is that's not really in the general feeling of the psalm. There really is no accusation against God. This person really is focused on himself. All he asks for God is that he lighten up a little bit. So some translations translate ta'ava based on the meaning of the word to desire. And it's that you know all my desires to be free of this punishment. Not that you know all of my desires to do sin, but you know that my desires to be free of punishment, and you see all my punishment, so save me. That's the Radak's opinion. But I can't help thinking that the word tava really has to do with more of an admission of sin. And just like he admitted his sin in the Matom Bivsari section, in the part where he was talking about his physical suffering, so too on his spiritual and psychological suffering. He's saying, look at my psychological sins as well. That is, what is it in my psyche and my spirit that causes me to do physical sins, to actualize my sins? And this internal psychological spiritual suffering now continues to be described. Libi sechachar azavani chochi vor enai gam heim ein iti. My mind spins around. My strength has left me. Even the light that shines from my eyes, all of these are no longer with me. Again, I'm translating lev as mind, although the idea of a libi sechachar could possibly be like a spinning heart or a palpitating heart. And when it says azavani chochi, it might be talking about a physical strength which is leaving him, and orenai may be a physical, all his eyes he can no longer see. However, again, the physical part is really over, and we're talking in these psukim about a psychological state. So I'm really translating all these as psychological maladies. And essentially, there's a circular effect. First, we had the massive suffering of the body. And that leads to the distressed soul, which then in turn causes and weakens the body, and round and round and round she goes. And maybe that's why in this last pasuk, all these words, which could be psychological, libi sechachar, my heart or my mind is spinning, azavani chochi, my strength is leaving me, and orenai gam heim iti, the light of my eyes no longer with me, maybe the author is intentionally giving us words which could be translated both as physical maladies as well as psychological / spiritual maladies, in order that we get the idea that there's this circular kind of effect of each part affecting the other until it goes down and down and down, worse and worse and worse. And now in verses 12 and 13, as is often found in the laments of the individual sufferer, we find a complaint about the enemies who deny support to the poor suffering person, and in fact even take advantage of his predicament. O avai v'rei'ai mineged nig'i amodu ukrovai merachok amadu. Those who love me and my companions will stand away from my afflictions, i.e. they withdraw from me as I'm in my troubles, and my relatives have stood far away. As I've mentioned before, we have here both a future and a past tense verb. Ya'amodu, they will stand, and amadu, the same root, but in the past tense, which means that really it's happening in the present. Everybody's abandoning me, but it feels like forever because the verbs take us all the way from the far distant past to the distant future. And usually this technique is used to describe confidence in God's power to save. Usually the verbs are, he has saved me, he will save me. Here, it's the exact opposite. There's a sense of despair that this abandonment by his friends and his companions will last forever. It seems like it's never, ever going to end. And also note also the very interesting word play on the word karov, relatives, krovai merachok amadu, but literally it means close ones, kirovai, who are now standing rachok, far away, i.e. they now feign that they have no family connections or obligations to me. And now, for the first time in this psalm, we have a poetic line that breaks down into three parts rather than the more common two. A, Vayinakshu mivakshei nafshi, those who seek my life set traps. B, V'dorshei ra'ati diburu havot, those who look for evil to befall me speak words of ruin or malice. Umirmot kolayom yehegu, every day they speak deceit. And perhaps this last line means that they come up with false reasons for my suffering, or perhaps they sense my weakness and they add to my slide with rotten words. But essentially what we have here is a three-part verse, because it really delineates the end of the first part of the psalm, which is, I beg for you for deliverance because things are really bad. I admit my sin, but look at my physical suffering. Look how my soul suffers because of it also. Look how terrible my enemies in three steps in every which way they try to bring me down. The author has really been woeful all the way. He's admitted his guilt. And at this point, there's a break, because from this point on, he's actually going to start to speak in his own defense. Up to now, it's been very negative. It's all about terrible things that I've done, and I feel, and I'm suffering, and my terrible enemies. And now he's really going to say, listen, I do have some value. And perhaps because of the fact that he's about to present what value he does have, that he's saying, sure, I deserve to be punished, but I also deserve a modicum of reprieve because of the good things that do exist about him. And he starts by contrasting his own behavior with those of his former friends that we just described. Va'ani, but me, the vav there is but. Va'ani kecheresh lo eshma uchileim lo yiftach piv. But me, like a deaf person, I refuse to listen. That is, I'm not going to listen to the way they say terrible things about me. Like a mute, I won't open my mouth, i.e. I won't say evil things about them. I won't say vengeful talk about them. Now, obviously, this doesn't include the prayer, which is personal between him and God. But just because they're speaking terribly doesn't mean he's going to heap it right back on them. Vahi ki'ish asher lo shomea ve'im b'fiv tochachotz. I was like a man who hears nothing, who has no rebukes in his mouth. I did not do to them what they were so quick to do to me. And the truth is, it's the nature of the man to make himself feel better when by trying to bring down others to his level or below. It's what I call the shopping line syndrome. That is, if you're at the end of a long line in the shopping market, the easiest way to feel better, you get an immediate sense of feeling better once somebody gets on the line behind you. And even if you're just as far off from the register, the fact that there's somebody who's suffering more than you makes you feel better. But not only does the author say that he doesn't go negative, so to speak, he actually accentuates his positive side. Ki lecha Adonai hochalti, ata ta'aneh Adonai Elohai. Indeed, or perhaps rather, I prayed to you, O Lord. You will answer, O my Lord, O my God. And there is hope here. There is a limited confidence that you will answer my prayers. But I'm afraid that this is all the confidence and hope that our psalmist can muster. And here is a good place to compare this psalm, Psalm 38, with other laments in general, and with the lament of Psalm 6, Tehillim Vav, which I mentioned before in particular. In that psalm, in Psalm 6, there is confidence that God has, at his, after all the description of suffering, which is just as bad as we're having here, which is really laid on thick as well, we do have the confidence that God has heard the prayer, his prayer, and that enemies will get what they deserve, their just deserts, or their just punishments. Over in that psalm, after all the descriptions of troubles and pain and sorrow and crying, the psalm ends, Suru mimeni kol po'alei aven ki shama Adonai kol b'chi. Get away from me, all you evildoers, because the Lord has heard the sound of my cries. The word shema is in the past tense. So even though God really hasn't heard, otherwise he would be in such a dire trouble, he is confident that God has heard his prayers. Shema Adonai tchinati, it says in that psalm, Adonai tfilati yikach. The Lord has heard my petition. The Lord will surely accept my prayers. But no such confidence appears here in this sister psalm. Also missing in this psalm is another very common element which I've discussed in individual laments, which is at the end where the psalmist promises to praise and thank God, whether privately or in public, after the salvation comes. Instead, from verse 17 forward, that is from this point on in our Tehillah, the psalmist really turns back to his suffering. He turns back to his enemies, and he turns back to his own sins. Instead of pulling him up with confidence, he sort of circles back into the same trouble that he started the psalm off with. In a series of three verses, which all begin with the word ki, the Hebrew word ki, indeed, as did the previous verse where he affirmed his trust in God, he now affirms that he needs to go over his troubles, that his troubles are really quite real. Ki amarti pen yismchu li b'mot ragli alai higdilu. Indeed, I say, ki amarti, and I think he's referring to the prayer that he specified in the previous verse. And this would be the prayer. I say the prayer in the previous verse, pen yismchu li, lest they rejoice over me, lest they raise themselves over me as my legs fall. Ki ani litzela nachon umachovai negdi tamid, and here he reaffirms his suffering, and maybe he is telling us what he actually prayed to when he talked about his own prayer two verses ago. Indeed, I am on the verge of stumbling. My pain is before me always. I am in constant pain. And again, the third time, ki avoni agid egdag michatati. Indeed, I do admit my transgressions. I fear because of my sins. And once again, the author, having stated that he is a sinner, that he is in terrible trouble, he again turns to the enemy. And it's not just his ill-speaking relatives and friends anymore. His enemies are multiplying. Voivai chayim atsemu virabu sonai shaker. And my life's enemies have grown powerful, atsemu. My deceitful enemies have grown in numbers, rabu. Umshalmei ra'a tachat tova yistinuni tachat rodefi tov. And those who pay back evil in place of the good done for them harass me in return or in place of my chasing after the good. That is, I did good for them, and instead of them paying me back nicely, they paid me back in the worst possible way. Now, the clear meaning is that it's just not fair. And the author is repeating that while he may be a sinner, compared to the deeds of his former friends, subjectively, he's an okay guy. Nonetheless, the psalmist can only finish off with this desperate plea. Al ta'azveni Adonai, Elohai, al tirchak mimeni. Don't abandon me, O Lord. Don't distance yourself from me. In contrast with my former friends and relatives who did distance themselves, don't distance yourself from me. Chusha le'ezrati, Adonai teshuati. Hurry to my aid, O my Lord. Oh, my salvation. A final note on the psalm, which is that it has exactly 22 lines of poetry, not including the inscription line. 22 is the number of letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And as we've seen in the previous psalm, psalm number 37, it was in fact an acrostic psalm where it went through the letters of the alphabet. And psalm 34 was also an acrostic alphabet. And psalm 33, while not an acrostic, also had 22 verses. So even though this psalm doesn't begin with each letter of the alphabet, it does seem to follow or make a statement about the power and the sequence of the Jewish alphabet of 22 letters.